Week 30, The Joy of Contentment, Part 1.
We're in the 30s.
Philippians 4, 10 through 13.
Yeah, can you believe it? There's only a couple weeks left, and we will be done with the book of Philippians. So Paul is rounding out the book of Philippians, and he is now kind of taking all the things he's talked about and bringing them together. And this week and next week, we're talking about this idea of contentment. Paul will say, I have learned to be able to be content in any situation, wherever I found myself, because he knows Christ. But he actually uses an interesting word here. He uses the word learned. He says, I have learned the secret of facing plenty and hunger and abundance need. I have learned in whatever situation I am to be content. And this then kind of shows the process that this isn't something that just naturally occurs. It's something we have to keep going back to the gospel and talking to ourselves about what Christ has done so we learn how to do this in all these situations, which means there are probably some difficult things we will go through in our lives of plenty and want and have to come back to the place where we trust Christ in the midst of it. So we learn in that. So this message, I am going to talk a lot about stuff and money and things and contentment. I don't think I've done a money sermon in a long time. This isn't really one. Like I say in the gospel class, I hope people don't think I think I'm working on commission here. I spend a lot of time in here talking about where contentment comes in our stuff. The Bible never says that money is evil or there's anything wrong with it. Though all the warnings are around how we think having enough stuff is going to lead to our safety and our contentment. And what Jesus constantly says is it doesn't. Our contentment comes from trusting him. And so one of the things we'll talk about is the ideas of our ideals versus our values, what we say we believe versus what we actually do, because a lot of people say how important they think it is to give and be generous, but a lot of people don't. And then we're going to look at some verses in like Proverbs and John and really come down to the end where C.S. Lewis says when we get to a place of where we're discontent, we can blame different things. We can blame the things themselves. Well, it's this thing that didn't do it. I just need a new thing. We can blame ourselves. You know, I'm the reason I'm unhappy. I just got to figure this out better. We can blame the universe. People do that today all the time. They don't want to say God, but it's the universe that's doing this to me. Or in a positive way, he says you can blame your relationship with God. You can say there's a God I was built for. There's a God who, if I knew him, would satisfy these desires. And that is what leads to ultimate contentment. Seeing that we and the desires we have were ultimately made to push us towards trusting God and all the things that he has done. And so, again, true contentment is learned. And that's really, I think, the push of the Ten Commandments. You know, have no other gods before me. Number 10, don't covet. Because if we had no other gods before God, coveting would be far from us. Because we learn to be content in who God is. Trusting Christ in all the situations as God takes us through to learn the lessons of what true contentment actually looks like. Trusting and walking with him. So one of the things that I'll talk about is the difference between wanting and coveting, because wanting isn't bad. I mean, we're designed to want things. We want relationship. We want friendship. We are designed to want to enjoy certain things that God has given us, like certain types of food or stuff like that. Wanting is not a bad thing. It's when wanting becomes coveting. Coveting is when you want something so bad that if you don't have it, you feel like your life's not going to be fulfilled. I have to have that. This thing is what grounds me. This thing is what gives me purpose. This thing is how I feel all of my meaning. Where wants many times can just be, that's really cool. I like that. And if you get it, great. If you don't, you don't. But it's not an idol. It's not the thing that brings you contentment. And so I think maybe a good thing for our GCs is talking about the difference between wanting and coveting.
It's hard for me to pinpoint something right now, but I can definitely look back and see where I've been thick in coveting. And a lot of times it has to do with relationships. It's not necessarily material, but that too, because I like stuff. But, you know, social media, you see people doing this or you hear about a hangout here and, well, they didn't talk to me about that, or why didn't I get invited to that? Or, and I can be victim of the, FOMO mentality and, not being content with the circle that is around me. Or if I knew someone who I would call a close friend was going through something hard and I found out about it from someone else, I will definitely get jealous. Like, well, why did they tell you first? Why didn't they tell me first? I don't have like hangout FOMO. Usually it's like the strength of relationship.
Intimacy FOMO. Is that a thing?
If it's not, it is now.
It is. You heard it here first.
I should get FOMO like that because I'm like, what are you guys doing?
Yeah.
Can I come?
You have no problem inviting yourself.
Yes, it's true. Always.
You know, last year, this year, when I was doing the ADU, there was almost a coveting of trying to find the money not to have to borrow anything to build the rest of it. Because I wanted to get this thing done, and I was just like pulling everything and dropping everything to get there. And it was like, what can I do? And at one point, it starts to feel like it takes over. Like it's, I have to do this thing, and if I have to borrow money, then there's something wrong with me. I didn't do it right. And I felt less than because I had to borrow money to finish it.
Mm-hmm. I don't think I'm lured so much by like things, but definitely experiences. And sometimes like at their most skewed, it's like those experiences can kind of say something like broader about my life. Right. And, but at the end of the day, realizing like it's the gospel that identifies me and labels me, and it's good to want things. It's good to have breaks or pace yourself or do something fun or, you know, strive for like a new challenge or milestone or something. But at the end of the day, like Jesus is the one who fulfills the desires of your heart. We can talk about Philippians 4:13.
Sometimes we think that ambition is a bad thing, and it's not a bad thing. It depends on what our ambition is for. And I think when you get to verse 13, when, you know, Paul starts speaking about what that looks, I think our ambitions can dovetail very well into the ideas of commitment and grace and what God's doing. Yeah. Like, I can do all things through him who strengthens me. And this is, when you have a godly ambition, you can move towards that.
Sean and I were talking about these verses, and I didn't know this, but he said growing up, he had a poster in his room with Philippians 4:13 of a guy dunking a basketball. And he's like, still can't dunk.
I guess the verse is wrong.
It's like, that's the most like American thing.
Yeah. My brother had a sweatshirt, and it was like outlined black and white, but it was like, Samson, I don't know how that relates, but like pushing two pillars and then like Philippians 4:13 under it.
Doesn't end well. Yeah.
Like, does it say I can kill all people, including myself?
I go, as an adult, I go look back and I'm like,
and have my eyes gouged.
Terrible sweatshirt.
But at least my hair's growing.
There is a question in here this week.
Oh yeah. How is this verse often misused?
Yeah. I mean, we throw that verse on mugs and t-shirts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Totally misunderstanding what it means, because I mean, when Paul gets that, I can do all things through him who strengthens me, that is referring to everything he's just talked about. It's not, look how great I am. God's going to give me all the things, give me all the muscles mm-hmm. to push the pillars out of the way. It's God has walked me through times when I could only afford to eat ramen and the times when I can afford to eat steak. Mm-hmm. He's walked me through all of those things. When I was living in a cardboard box versus living in a mansion. And the only thing that will keep us content through all of it is trusting Christ. And one of the ways we can see if we've really trusted him is what we do in our want and in our plenty. And the way we learn is typically through our failures. And we are going to fail in this. And it's okay. So, well, so the proverb says, the leech's daughters cry out more, more, because mm-hmm. it's never enough. You just need more. When we don't learn contentment, we sit in that spot where we want something, but we don't even know what it is. We just think, I'll know it when I get it. And if we don't define the course of our life, my first off in Christ, but define the thing that we are looking and going towards, we're never going to know when we reach it, because we're never going to reach it. It's just always the next thing. Oh, how about that? What is something you really wanted that when you finally got it, it didn't satisfy you the way you thought it would?
I mean, pretty much everything on some level.
Yeah,
right?
that's mm-hmm. what I was going
to
say.
I mean, there's big ones, I guess, that you can point to in life. But, you know, I think one of the big things kind of creeps into our life is, you know, how easy Amazon is, right? And how we just, it's a lot of times just on autopilot. And it's like all these boxes show up and you're like, yeah, I didn't need this junk, but here it is, and it's going to be great. And 5 minutes later, you're back on Amazon looking for the next fix.
Mm-hmm. Or the fix, the thing that just broke.
I think about moving. When we lived on the north side of town, all I thought about was, getting out of the north side of town and moving into Orchid. And because it took so long for our house to sell, we were on the market for like 9 months or whatever. It for sure, I like became obsessed with it, right? And just getting to Orchid, that's the school district, that's the neighborhood. I'm gonna be able to have relationships with my neighbors, and you know, I just had this ideal in my brain. And then we get to our house. I probably had a better relationship with our last next door neighbors. Not that ours is bad now, but like we literally didn't speak the same language, but we still went to each other's barbecues because food unites.
That's the best. Because you know it's going to be good food.
Oh, my favorite was when they would just show up with platefuls and be like, sorry, because it's going to be loud tonight. But, you know, I move here and now it's like my house is too small. My neighbors across the street don't take care of their house. Like, yeah, it lasted a second. It was this ideal that was going to fix everything in our life and make life so much better. And surprise, here I am 10 years later. My house is too small. I want this. I want to go there. But it's a great house.
How do you think we come alongside people, you know, ideally in GCs, or other relationships where like we're sharing life with people, or gradually seeing more and more of kind of like the heart manifest, right? In the way people talk or their choices. And if you see kind of this deep unrest, how do you think you come alongside someone and expose that in a loving way?
You've got to be aware enough to know if they want you to do it first, because there's people in ours that I think they say that they want this, but they don't because of what they always talk about when they start dealing with some of the things. Oh, I just need this. Well, you know, there's these things that we could do to, oh yeah. And they don't even listen to a word you're saying because they don't care. I think you have to look for the people who really want to grow in that relationship. And then I think you can come alongside them. And I think that's when you get to step in and walk with them and really start, you know, what is the heart issue at the base of this thing for you? You know, why is this thing so important in this way? Not that it can't be important. So we're not saying like this want or whatever it is unimportant. It's why has it captured your heart the way that it has?
Right.
And maybe help them get some perspective on it too.
So they're willing, right?
Yeah.
They need help. They're open to it. I think stopping and listening to what the deeper heart issues are, what it is that they're searching for. Because it may not be obvious right away to us. Or we might misjudge it, and then we're not really speaking to the core issues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, listening well. We're trying to draw out more context, maybe.
So if there are places where maybe we start to understand I'm discontent because of this or that, the point of it is not to live in guilt. The point is to thank God for showing us that, and then say, God, teach me how, either whether it's through friends, with the work of your spirit, teach me how to learn to be content in these situations. Thank you for these situations where there are wants or desires that I have that are in front of me. But teach me how to learn to be content in these things. And then I can then live that out and help other people around me as well, where I begin to live out the nuclear option in all things.
And dunk a basketball.
And if you're John G, dunk a basketball because you can do all things through God who gives you strength out of context.